Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, in the bunker. Yeah, in the bunker in north central Indiana, about 250 miles from that Chicago. Yeah, up there where Obama and all his boys came from. Yeah, all that machine politics up there in the state of Illinois. You know, I feel sorry for those people who live downstate in Illinois. They don't have anything to say about anything. It's just Chicago. Yeah. Well, anyhow, it is January the 14th, 2009. Niner. Yeah, and it's been snowing all night, and it's snowing today. It's putting down about 3-4 inches a day here, and we're just having lots of fun here, and I like it. I like it because, you know, it's going to chase a lot of these Mexicanos back to Mexico. Yeah, see, hard weather is good for the white race because guess where our longtime living quarters were? Up there in the Nordic countries. Yeah, up there where the weather was mean, and we didn't have to worry about too many niggas trying to get up there because they like that hot weather. They like that hot weather. So if you're somebody that just likes hot weather, maybe you got some nigger blood in you, so you better check out who your grandpappy and grandmammy were. And I notice even among whites, when it gets the first frost around here in the fall, all these white pussies are headed for Florida. Yeah. So I welcome hard, rough weather. It's going to cull out the population a little bit. At least they'll move to another part of the country. Yeah, I should have thought of that that before. We are at Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. You can write your letters or send your orders and your payments to that P.O. box, but also make a copy of your order and send it out to merchandise@resistance.com. And that goes right to our giant warehouse, the one right next to the Kmart warehouse out there in California. I think our warehouse is even a little bigger. Yeah, how about that? Also, we've added another thing, which is not new to a lot of people, but it's new to us. We're putting a translation program onto our website, so you can go up there to all our DVDs, not DVDs, but PDFs, and all our NAVs, and you can, especially our NAVs, and you can put them out in whatever language you want. Copy them and forward them on to your friends around the world. So if you've got people in other countries, Germany, Russia, all the white countries have been white countries of the world, well, there you go. And they do a pretty good job of translation, too. Yeah, they do. Let's see what else is new. I see Obama. He's probably back from Mexico by now. He probably would rather have stayed in Mexico. I got a feeling this boy likes warm weather. He was born in Kenya. You know, that's really something else. We know for sure he was born in Kenya to a 17-year-old mother. I heard some talk show people call the government there in Kenya during the campaign. They talked to the premier, the president of Kenya, and he said very openly, yes, Obama was born right out here at this place, and there's all kinds of markings there to celebrate it and the whole bit. So it was, we got a Kenyan president. We got a half Negro president, but he's a Kenyan. Now, if he says, oh, no, I was born in Hawaii, well, I don't give much for Hawaii either. See, that goes back to when we were into that Manifest Destiny stuff with Theodore Roosevelt and so forth, started all that stuff, and now we got all these South Sea Islanders with U.S. citizenships roaming around the country. And see, that colonialism is a bunch of bullshit, never should have been. And of course the British were the biggest colonizers, and it wasn't so bad that they would go there just on business and trade and get the stuff goodies, but then they bring all these non-whites back to England, And then when they gave them their independence, they gave them citizenship. So the whole non-white world that we're under British colonialism is trying to crowd onto that little island up there called England. I mean, that isn't going to work, boys. And we're getting a lot of response from England, yeah, the UK. And they like the way we talk. They're so sick and tired of listening to that mamby-pamby BNP type talk that they don't know what to do. And I don't know what's the matter with those boys. They were worrying about somebody stole their mailing list, but the way they're going over and cozying up to the Zionists now, what makes the difference? If they're just going to concentrate on the Muslims and leave the Jews alone, that just don't make it. That don't make it. If you got the Muslims out and shipped them back, they'd be no problem in their own countries. But Jews that have perennially, I guess, infiltrated the UK and England and the United States and everything else, they're a continual pain in the ass. How do you like this thing over in Israel? How do you like that? Oh, boy. They're really slamming it to the Palestinians, and the Palestinians are slamming back, it looks like, with everything they've got. Well, anyhow, I hope they bring back Black September, and if they had a few suicide bombers walk into a shopping center in Tel Aviv, they might get some attention. Yeah. Okay, well, look, we're waiting on Guerrilla Radio Man. He said he's flying over. I don't know how in the hell he's going to get here in this weather, because it's almost a whiteout. But they said he's flying in. But he's flying another plane. It's a prop plane. I don't know where he gets all these planes. I guess it's... Maybe I did give him one of those Russian prop planes that I have in my weapons of mass destruction pile out here. So I'm going to turn on the aircraft radio and see if he's coming, okay? He should be here any time. I know, he must have some cover. He must have some cover today. Maybe he's got an old prop fighter plane following him over here, because the Jews have been trying to knock him out of the air with their anti-aircraft. He must not be too far away. Those bigger planes, we have them land over here on the golf course.
915,
that one's too big. I can't land him here. We'll land him on the golf course.
Okay, 1 o'clock.
There he goes. Well, he's landing over there on the golf course. I'll have to get the Jeep, my Japanese Jeep, and go over and get him. Man.
This is Ghost Wolf Radio calling, a subsidiary program of the Insurgency Radio Network, an association of cells and individuals who may have gone rogue, who knows. They don't want to go by the run-of-the-mill, the status quo activities that have failed us in the past. We don't want to lay down before this mercenary government that has seized the capital, Washington, D.C., and made it a transnational capital for corporations. You know, my hatred for Hollywood really knows no bounds. I mean, you know, I saw a good movie, Gran Torino. There were a couple of scenes in the movie that were worth the price of admission. But the stuff that's on TV, it just solidifies the fact that we are just as capable of being classically conditioned, just like Ivan Pavlov's dogs. I was watching 24 Sunday night and last night, and they have this female president. And if you remember, the show 24 had a black president even before Obama was even hitting it running for the presidency. I truly believe, deep down in my heart, that many powerful people in Hollywood make these not sitcoms, but primetime television, the movies at the theater, to classically condition us. When's the last time you saw a Jewish janitor? When's the last time you saw a Jewish machine shop worker? Every Jew I've ever met has either in college or graduated from college has always been steered towards things that control public opinion. And this 24 had a female president, and you know, she was, you know, had this heroic, you know, demeanor about her, and she just knew who to call and who to send to solve a problem and this and that. Just like the guy that does the Allstate commercials, the black guy who was the president of 24 before. But what pissed me off about this show was that she was faced with a dilemma because this rogue unit of these Africans had the capability of just making planes collide over U.S. airspace. And, you know, the guy was saying, if you don't pull your troops out of Sangala, whatever the hell the name was of that African country, then we're going to start doing terrorist acts in the United States. And she was just so torn apart about the dilemma of either saving American lives or saving African lives. That is how they are classically conditioning us, you know, feeding us this notion that African lives are just as valuable as American lives. Bullshit. Not all human life is valuable. There's so much human scum on the face of this planet. I mean, Mother Nature, help us out here. I mean, we need some help here because too many white people are just sitting on their ass and letting the world go to shit. You know, what happens when you take a natural predator out of an environment? You know, it creates an imbalance. It creates, you know, if you take all the wolves out of the Rocky Mountains, you know, the herds of elk and moose or whatever would just make the place a barren wasteland. It would just eat up everything, you know? And since the white man has stepped off the scene pretty much and became the puppet for Jews and black, brown, and yellow, the world is going to shit. You know, it just, you know, and also this, it seemed like 24 was promoting torture and how it's a good thing. I heard a statement on TV yesterday when I was flipping through the channels. This Lisa Rinna, big lip fucking girl, I don't know, she does the TV Guide station or whatever. She actually had the audacity to say that Hollywood glamour is what we turn to when times are tough. Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, is she for real? Their lives are wrapped around what's going on with J-Lo and fucking Justin Timberlake? Does that matter to us? Does that matter to you? Is that important to you? And if it is, and you're part of a Radio Club Network, then you need to reevaluate where your worldview is. I listened to the airing update line last night, and just guys are calling up MedStar and just saying, you're like, man, we want you to come out and check out our organization and come to our rallies. Are they fucking listening to what is going on with Resist.com? I mean, Resist.com stopped promoting that over a decade ago. Well over, maybe two decades ago. You know, the time has come where we shouldn't play this Mickey Mouse shit anymore. You know, we're not being allowed to determine our own destiny, we as white people. You know? And a healthy white person needs to be collective in his thinking towards black, brown, and yellow, and Jews. We're the time to sort out the good Jews from the bad Jews, and the good blacks from the bad blacks. It is healthy that, you know, when around blacks never relax. You guys saw the t-shirt or the cartoon on resist.com. When around blacks never relax. You know what? If it's healthy for us to be collective in our thinking towards the races, then we need to be collective in our thinking towards institutions. Oh, this is a good institution here. This one's not, this one doesn't have as many Jews. They're all bad. They're all corrupt. We need to realize that. Shit. African lives are just as valuable as American lives. Bullshit. you know, I watched Death Wish the other day with Charles Bronson, and this was after he started going on a killing spree for what happened to his family. And he's walking with his son, I guess, or son-in-law, I forgot what he was, what kind of relationship he had with him. And his character, Charles Bronson's character, Paul Kersey, said to his son, what have we become when faced with a society, when faced with a dangerous society that has, you know, just overrun with human scum that preys on us, and we do nothing about it but run and hide? What have we become? And the son answered, I don't know, civilized? Well, you know what? Like I said before, stop feeding the sheep. You feed the sheep when you watch these teary-eyed, tear-jerking movies where they show blacks overcoming insurmountable odds of, you know, oppression or racism to become a Supreme Court justice or some bullshit. I mean, every year they're coming out with Holocaust movies, and sure enough, along with that, they got a movie showing some black guy or some group of black students or black athletes overcoming some kind of racism. You know, and you know what? It's worked. Their tactics have worked because the vast majority of our race is shit. And we need to get to a point. I've already gotten to the point. You know, I mean, yeah, it pisses me off to no end when I hear about things going on that went on in Knoxville in 06 and went on in Wichita in the year 2000. It pisses me off, and I want revenge, and I want you guys to want revenge, and I hope that, you know, I hope that the things I say are on the tip of every white man's tongue, but just they're just too afraid to voice it, you know? But we need, I was just about to say, we need to do something. We need to start, you know, grabbing our balls and just reasserting ourselves as men. But we all need to ask that of ourselves. So let's talk about some things here. You know what? I'm going to tell you right now. Don't ever write anything down. You know I said before that, you know, you could write out a little placard on an index card, use reverse block lettering and stuff like that to leave a note behind or for the things that you've done or whatever. You know, there was a guy, not that any of us are going to become serial killers, but there is a serial killer in, I believe it was North Carolina, who wrote a note or allowed the victim that he killed to write a last will testament. And the feds, they use this technique called electrostatic detection. I think that's what it's called. And basically, they took a piece of saran wrap and they put it over the note, the sheet of paper that the note came on, you know, the last will and testament or whatever the note that the killer left behind. And they put this black carbon-based powder over the piece of saran wrap that they had over the note. And basically, it highlighted the letters of a note that was written on either the sheet before that note that came from the killer, or a couple sheets before. So if you ever have to write anything down, make sure you tear the piece of paper off the notebook and then write whatever you got to write on a hard surface. But to eliminate that as a possibility at all, just don't write anything down. Commit everything to memory. I thought multiple times about disposable clothing. I just want to add something to that. Make sure you buy your disposable clothing. Like if you buy a shirt that has a big Nike symbol on it, make sure nobody ever sees that shirt. Make sure when you walk out of the store with it, you tie a knot in the top of the bag so that shirt never mixes with fibers of your car, the fibers of the clothes you're wearing, or gets any of your hairs on it. Okay? But also, to buy that stuff at a clothing store, whatever, Target, Walmart, whatever, that's nowhere near where you work or where you live. Okay? Make sure when you do your shopping for Ghost Wolf clothing, make sure it's far away from where you work and where you live. First of all, you don't want a chance bumping into somebody that knows you and you're buying this very distinctive shirt. Yes, I have said before that you need to dress in nondescript earth tone colors, but you can also buy a shirt, you know, like a blue shirt that says Adidas on it or it has the Nike symbol on it, wear it during your lone wolf op because you could be caught on a bank surveillance camera, a home surveillance camera, a McDonald's surveillance camera, or a street traffic camera. And you have this very distinctive shirt, and if you ever become a person of interest, they check your closet, and they're looking for that shirt, but they'll never find it because you burned it after you were done with it. You know, Mao said, swim in the sea of the people, and a good boastful, good gorilla would swim in the sea of the people, but what happens when the fish is removed from the sea? Now, Warren Flea gave numerous examples about how guerrilla insurgency fails when it doesn't have the support of the people. Well, that's exactly what we're faced with in North America, in England, in Europe, in Australia, and in New Zealand, and Canada also, part of North America. But we're never going to have popular support, but there is ways of getting around it and using that to our advantage. Man, you guys do not realize how powerful and influential you are as a one-man army. You are much harder to detect than a cell, and a cell is much harder to detect than a 200-person organization that is easily monitored by the enemy. But the book talked about the Hucks and the Magsaysay of the Philippine Islands, the Greek communists, movement in Greece in 49, I believe, and the insurgency in Malaysia. All of them failed because they didn't have popular support. And the other examples where there was popular support, the guerrilla insurgency did finally fight its way into power, you know. Well, we're not going to have popular support, and we're going to treat the dumbed-down, cowardly white masses out there. We're going to have an indifference towards them. We need to develop that. We need to develop the sense that if there's white collateral damage, hey, you know what, I'm not happy about it, but it happens. And it's not going to stop me from doing what needs to be done. Okay? We're collective in our thinking, right? We're collective in our thinking towards institutions. Want to reiterate that. All right, guerrilla war must be started in the cities of the white diaspora. We can't be like a third world and think we're going to start this out in the boondocks somewhere. Okay? A lot of this we've talked about before. I just want to, you know, Tom Metzger has repeated many things, you know, numerous times to get up through people's skulls. And so I guess I'm going to do the same thing. So swim in the sea of the people, and you are very powerful as one man. Okay? Remember also that the real war is a war of the have-nots. Everyone listening to this, under the sound of my voice right now, is a have-not. I don't care if you're making six figures a year. You belong to an ideology that is maybe two steps above pedophilism. You know, I mean, we're treated with such disrespect. You know, they treat us like we're the scum of the earth because we want to save our race and keep our race alive. And that's how bad, and, you know, our number one enemy in this country and in, abroad in Europe and abroad in Australia and other parts of the world, our worst enemy is white people. They will fight to the death to prove that they're not, you know, racist. It's interesting, I heard a saying the other day that said, victory has many fathers, but defeat is an orphan. And maybe that's why so many of our people, our dumbed down white masses, want to be with the enemy, because their ideology of social Marxism and whatever, it just seems so victorious. But remember what I said before, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. We're not going to win this thing in a year, but man, what we can do in a year. I hope we're talking about some good things on New Year's Eve night of 09. Or 2009 is going into 2010. So, I want to talk about your bug out bag here. I want you guys to get a hold of a bag that is smaller than a camping rucksack that you bring out to the woods, and bigger, maybe a little bit bigger than a school book bag. If you have a school book bag with many any pockets or so to speak, it may work. Make sure it is in earth tone colors. You don't want a big, bright red bug out bag. And the things you're going to have in a bug out bag is and all of these items are going to be in waterproof, whatever. You can buy a waterproof bag from the Army Surplus Store, use grocery bags from the store, trash bag liners, whatever you need to waterproof everything. And the following things should be in your bug out bag. You should have a fresh pair of pants. These pants need to be sturdy, earth tone pants. You know, like a good pair of work pants, Carhartt, that are maybe brown, or maybe Hunter Green, or OD Green, or Forest Green, okay? You want a sturdy shirt of some kind, whether it's a work shirt, a thick, not thick, but well-constructed sweatshirt, a hoodie of some kind, that's also an earth tone color. You don't want bright colors. You want at least four pair of socks, at least two sets of underwear, and two t-shirts, two undershirts. Maybe also you could put in there a pair of good hiking type of boots, but not a boot, more like a shoe. Maybe that's like ankle high, something more sturdy than a tennis shoe, but not as heavy as a work boot. You guys know what I'm talking about. And maybe a hat that is also earth tone colored, but also nondescript of anything your friends would ever see you wear. And you're going to have a couple flashlights, handheld flashlights. You always want a backup. Fresh batteries in your flashlights, and make sure you insert the batteries into your flashlights wearing gloves. You don't want to leave any prints on your flashlight in case you drop it somewhere. And that'd be one of the first places they go to look for prints to find the owner, or the battery. Okay? Also, a good thing to have would be, and maybe in a Ziploc bag, at least $500 cash. If you can get a hold of another set of identification, you know, a false driver's license, Social Security, that is a great plus, really. Now, this cash you put in your bag, you know, if you're strapped for beer money, you're not going to go to your bug-out bag and get that and say, oh, I'll replace it on payday. Once you put that money in your bag, you leave it the fuck alone, okay? A good pry bar, a small pry bar, maybe something that's like 9 to 10 inches long that you can carry in the base of the bag. And also, you don't want this bag too heavy, okay? You don't want to be, because your bug-out bag, your escape and evade bag, we had a saying in the Army, travel light, freeze at night. You know, it's great when you're walking around in a wintertime environment with a backpack that only weighs 30 pounds. But at nighttime, when you went to sleep, you froze your ass off. So you cursed it at night, but you were glad in the daytime when you had a light pack to hump around. And hump is a grunt term, meaning to walk over large distances with a pack. Okay. A couple other things to put in your bug-out bag. You want to go to the Army Surplus Store and get a poncho liner. Poncho liner is kind of like a thin quilt, so to speak, but it's a poncho liner. Okay, you can just wrap yourself up. You can put that, you can roll yourself up with a poncho liner and then roll yourself up in a poncho. You can keep yourself relatively warm at night, but it's not going to work in sub-zero temperatures, but, you know, it's something in case you get caught outside. You also want to get a mosquito net. See, the poncho can be used as a tent. In a mosquito net, you would possibly wrap yourself up with that or drape that over your makeshift shelter or just wrap yourself up in it along with your poncho liner at night, okay? If you have to bug out through some woods, you know, to spend a few days in some woods, you want to be prepared for that. Also, I recommend getting at least 20 feet of 550 cord. Another word for 550 cord is parachute cord. You can buy this by the spools in an Army Surplus Store. You're not going to put the whole spool in your bag, in your escape and evade bag. You just maybe 20 feet. Maybe 50 feet, you know. You can use this to tie off your poncho and create a shelter, you know, tie it off to a tree. Also, 550 cord makes great boot laces, you know. cut it to a specific length, and then when you got it laced up through your boots, you know, and plus it's OD green in color. You know, but that could be distinctive if you're wearing black boots. So, you know, there's a trade-off there, okay? But it's very, very durable, and it takes a long time for it to fray, and it's the reason why it's called 550 cord, because it has a tensile strength of 550 pounds. The parachute cord, it's what, you know, I guess what they use to connect the risers of the parachute to the actual fabric of the parachute, okay? So you want to put that, like I said before, some of these items you also want to keep in your black ops bag, you know, like a glass cutter. You want to take maybe 5 feet of duct tape and wrap it around the handle of your glass cutter. You don't want to put a big, bulky roll of duct tape in your escape and evade bag. And everything's waterproof. And you do not keep your bug-out bag, your E&E bag, the phrase bug-out bag, I actually heard that from a white Special Forces guy, so I don't think it's a black term, but it does kind of sound like it. So that's why I'm switching off between saying bug-out bag or escape and evade bag. You keep that somewhere. You cache that somewhere. Cache, you know, hide it somewhere where nobody's expected to know it, know where it is. Also, you can keep it in a covert storage space. Remember, you guys got like a small storage locker that you paid $40, $35 a month for? You know, you guys have scouted one out that possibly doesn't have surveillance cameras. And when you sign the contract for that and you get the lock for that you memorize the code you need to use to get into the facility. And once it's memorized, you burn it. Remember, you set no paper trail. And like I've talked with Tom Nesky before on that, a couple shows past about the extreme forensics, you never use paper trail to try to create an alibi that you were someplace else. Leave paper trails alone. Okay, they can be used against you. You have all these store receipts saying you were in Columbus, Ohio, instead of being in Bakersfield, California, murdering your wife and kids. Or they can pull up the surveillance cameras of that Walmart in Columbus, Ohio, of that specific time and say, hey, that wasn't you in the store, that was your cousin. Yeah. Remember that. Stay away from paper trails. Stay away from any electronic trails. That means credit cards, okay? You know, the other night, I was in one of the city parks here in the town I live. And just before we got all the snow, we didn't have any snow on the ground. It was right after we had the big thaw a few weeks ago. And I was just sitting in the park. I was in what I thought was a nice coveted concealed position. I saw these three mestizo shitskins walk into the park. They walked into the park at the north end and walked out of the park at the east end. And I was at the west end of the park. And I was just watching them. But I noticed that even though the scene before me was dark, I knew they were shitskins because I could hear them speaking Spanish. But my point is to never, ever silhouette yourself. I thought I was covered and concealed because the scene before me where these shitskins were walking was pretty dark. But in back of me was a well-illuminated parking lot. And all these shitskins had to do was look to the left and they would have seen a silhouette of somebody standing there. Always be cognizant of silhouetting yourself. If you were going over an obstacle on a bright moonlit night, make sure you go over on your belly. If you can go under the obstacle, even better, or go around it. But if you ever have to go, and if you're walking, and you crest the top of a hill, stay away from hilltops, because you silhouette yourself. Always be cognizant of silhouetting yourself. You may be, when you look somewhere, you may say, wow, it's, you know, the scene is dark before me. Well, how does it look in back? You always be checking your 6 o'clock to make sure that you're not silhouetting yourself, okay? I want to make sure I throw that in there. Okay, reading my notes here, trying to see what I want to find out about, what I want to read here. Okay, I saw, you guys are sending good stuff out there. There was a guy who sent some things in to our friend Metzger, talking about narco-terrorism. That was good. Whoever sent that, I know he sent that, I don't want to say his name. There was another guy who sent in, you know, the civilian self-defense forces that the ZOG will, you know, start up and initiate to fight guerrilla activity. We want to see these civilian self-defense forces as enemy happens and deal with them ruthlessly, because if it catches on all over the place, then it will be possibly insurmountable obstacle for us. But I got here someone that's, I guess, sent Terrible Tommy some things about how we can learn from Hezbollah. And right now, I want to say something right now. Hamas and Hezbollah, I never want an alliance with them. If these shit-skinned Palestinians and Lebanese are going to gang rape white Australian girls, I'm telling you right now, this thing going on with Israel and Hamas, I don't give a fuck if every shit-skin is murdered by the Israelis. I really don't. I hope they kill each other. I hope the body count on both sides just goes through the roof. I have no alliance with them. I don't give a fuck about them. Yeah, I know it's terrible that the Israelis are brutalizing them, but you know what? They come over to the West, and then they brutalize our women. So I don't give a shit about them. But I want to read some things here. Two very relevant, excellent articles on guerrilla warfare news and views. Middle East strategies at Harvard. I guess some guy wrote something. Learning from Hezbollah. And it says that Hezbollah uses a decentralized command structure that allows its subordinate leaders to exercise a high degree of initiative on the battlefield. Listen, if you're autonomous, if you're by yourself, or you have a small cell of three or four guys, you don't answer to anybody. And that gives you a tremendous amount of power and freedom to do whatever you want. You don't have to coordinate with anybody. You guys are powerful. And I want you to see that. So if there's similarity, if other guerrilla groups successfully emulate Hezbollah's model, they too will be much more difficult adversaries on the battlefield. Okay, small cells, individuals that are autonomous, they don't answer to anybody. That is a major, major headache for Zog. Okay? Goes right along the line with leaderless resistance. It says here, the amorphous Hezbollah, led by Hassan Nasrallah, whatever the hell that shit-skin name is, represents a rising threat, mixing an organized political movement with decentralized armed cells employing adaptive tactics in ungoverned zones. Hezbollah affirms an emerging trend. Highly disciplined, well-trained, distributed cells can contest modern conventional forces with an admixture of guerrilla tactics and technology in densely packed urban centers. I've already said that a guerrilla movement in North America or Britain or Australia or anywhere else in Europe or New Zealand has to start in the cities. Why? Because it's easier to swim in the sea of the people in the urban centers than it is out in the rural areas. Stay away from the rural areas. You've heard Tom Metzger tell you before, they can shoot you down like a dog, and there's no witnesses to say that it was an act of police brutality. Okay? Stay in the city, stay in the, you know, but if there's a natural disaster, get away from people. I do want to stress that. Okay? Also, mixing an organized political movement with decentralized armed cells, employing adaptive tactics in ungoverned zones, Hezbollah affirms an emerging trend, highly disciplined, well-trained, discreet cells can contest. I just fucking read that. Well, alright. Now, you know, it says here that they were aligned with a political movement, but their military personnel were decentralized and autonomous, I guess. And, you know, that they were missing guerrilla tactics. We don't want to align. If you're a ghost wolf out there or part of a guerrilla cell, don't align yourself with anybody. Stay the hell away from the Klan, from NSM, from National Alliance, from World Church of Creator, even the Vinlanders, anyone who's high profile, you stay the hell away from them. Okay? Because it's a different ballgame in our country. You know, I mean, we have informants and agent provocateurs all over the place. Okay, you can do some pretty good things if you just shut your mouth, don't get any racial tattoos. If you do have tattoos and they're racial, get them covered up and quietly find another place to live. There'll be a lot of guys out there don't want to make that sacrifice. There'll be a lot of guys out there, you know, just want to just go along with the flow, but call themselves an insurgent. You know, our struggle is not our fault. It's really not. I mean, the system created us. You know, I've heard Tom Esker say before, if the system hates us so much, then why did they create us? You know, here's a little interesting note here. $9.8 billion was spent at the box office in 2008. $9.8 billion. Our thirst to be entertained is so great that we allow our minds to be packed with bullshit by Jews and other subhumans. Okay? Stay away from the box office unless you can learn something. Like, I plan on going and seeing the movie Taken with Liam Neeson. He's like a retired hitman. I guess they abduct his daughter. I may check it out, see what, you know, kind of stuff passes for possibly good guerrilla tactics, you know. And we need to be learning from stuff like that. But if the struggle, if the system hates us so much, then why did they create us? They created us, you know? And I think I want to use an unorthodox manner. I guess I want to take the system's tactics and throw it back in their face. I want to tell a little story about one of our listeners. This listener probably is listening to this show right now and doesn't even realize that I'm talking about him. I'm definitely talking about the next Joseph Paul Franklin. I believe the next Joseph Paul Franklin, I'm going to go on record right now saying I'm hoping that he makes the original look like a choir boy. But this system is so hell-bent on blurring the lines of distinction between the races, between the ethnicities, between the traditional roles of men and women. Listen, I'm not one of these guys who wants women barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen. I think in a good Aryan society, women can have a very dominant role in the sciences. Women have a good discipline about them that men don't. Women are more likely to hit the books and study for hours and hours to get somewhere than men are. Okay? As it stands now, the system is being dominated by Pakis and Hindus and Asians in the sciences. They don't dominate, but they're starting to make headway in them. And if the white youth does not wake up, they're going to wake up in an America that's no longer theirs. I mean, technically it's no longer ours now, but I mean, we're just going to be even more so strangers in our own land, and we're going to be Kurds of North America. The Kurds of North America, a people without a nation. We're going to be, if you think it's bad on white people now, what do you think it's going to be like in 20, 25 years when the healthcare industry is even more so dominated by non-whites? And you're a white senior citizen laying up in some nursing home somewhere? Do you really think they're going to be motivated to change your bedpan? They're probably going to be thinking, yeah, 25 years ago, this guy was probably a racist. You know. I remember my mother was in one of them, she was hospitalized. She was old in age, and I was with her in her room one day, and I guess this incompetent fucking shit-skin nurse gave her a shot of pure potassium in the center on the cardiac arrest. This fucking incompetent shit-skin, who I guess couldn't read English properly, it said right on her chart, do not give her any potassium. But what does this shit-skin do? She gave her a shot of pure potassium. And then she was kind of like comatose for like 3 days. I mean, she was out of it, you know. And I remember they had to do some kind of, they had to put her on a gurney. They had to take her off the bed and put her on a gurney. And they were trying to move her, and my mom is like, you know, going on 70 years old. I mean, she's old. She's an old lady. And her skirt came undone. And it, you know, basically showed her naked old body. Momentarily for a couple of seconds, and this male Filipino nurse laughed. I'm like, what the fuck are you laughing at? And he finally realized, you know, he realized that maybe he shouldn't have laughed at that. But that's the mentality of what we're dealing with. Can you imagine what it's going to be like in 25, 20, 30 years from now? How white people are going to be treated? Do you think they're going to care about your old white ass? If you think that you have any kind of future at all, you better start fighting for it now. And I'm not talking about passing out literature. Those days are gone. The only type of social activity I would think I would excuse are really new newbies who are coming on board who want to really just spread black propaganda everywhere. You know, take your magic marker, you're going to go into a stall somewhere, you're going to write, kill all white people. I recommend you do that, because the next white person who's in that stall taking a shit is going to see that, and it could be one of these social Marxists. And you maybe want to add on to your message there, I don't give a fuck about y'all white people trying to be my friend, trying to kiss my black ass. We're going to kill all y'all white motherfuckers. You know, make sure it sounds like a nigger wrote it. Make sure you misspell some words. Like, maybe spell the word white, W-I-T-E, you know? Make it legitimate. Black propaganda. But I want to tell a story about the next Joseph Paul Franklin, who I am not ashamed to say is someone I respect. I respect Benjamin Smith a great deal. I respect Robert J. Matthews even more so, and David Lane and Frank Silva. I respect tremendously Gordon Call, okay? But these shitskins, these fucking Jews, are so hell-bent on mixing everything. Well, I'm going to mix two things right now that should never be mixed and just throw it back in their face. How about if I was to mix white racism with gangster rap? Throw it back in their face. I wonder what it would sound like. White racism with gangster rap. Maybe it'll sound like this. Check 1-2. This Pecker Wood ain't soft. He's a white racist and about to go off. He's a straight-up killer, walking the streets, shooting down mugs that he happens to meet. He's a fucking nightmare, born in white skin, his body count rising as the war begins. He's an enemy of this diversity racket. He's solving this problem with Full Metal Jacket. He got scars, bruises, and 14 stitches. He's the killer of all white nigger-loving bitches. He's the white-skinned, dog-faced pariah, about to set the whole damn world on fire. He's got two pit bulls named Bowden and Thor. They're on the prowl every night to settle some scores. His hatred for society knows no bounds. There's a smile on his face when City Hall burns down. White sellout, sorry motherfuckers, don't mess with his friends because they're redneck truckers. They're going to deal with you in medieval ways. You're going to regret your betrayal on your dying day. Punk bitches who bathe in riches, he's burning down the palace and throwing bodies in ditches. Judgment night, must pray for morning light. He's an Aryan apocalypse, 2 minutes to midnight. Yo, Jew, he ain't forgot about you. When the system comes down, your time is through. Silly rabbit, tricks are for kids. You're gonna pay in spades for all the shit you did. Ain't fucking around, no mercy no more. He's cutting a lot of throats in this race war. It's sweet revenge mixed with aftershock. It's the end of the world, this is Ragnarok. So fuck you, niggers. Fuck you, sticks. He's gonna take apart your bodies with axes and picks. You hear the woods come alive with the rebel yell? It's December 21st, 2012. Right back at you, you silly, sorry-ass Jew motherfuckers. Every so often, my hatred for the Jews is reborn. You know, I mean, true, we are betrayed by our own people, and we need to deal with them ruthlessly. I mean, look at Bernie Madoff, right? This guy who robbed all these people of millions and millions of dollars. By the way, he's a Jew. You guys probably already knew that. Well, this Katzenberg guy who owns DreamWorks movie productions was going off about it the other day, saying, oh, he shouldn't be allowed to walk the streets. By the way, Bernie Madoff is on house arrest in a $7 million apartment, you know, a condo, I guess, somewhere on the upper west side or east side of Manhattan in the rich part, with bellhops and bellboys and freaking butlers, probably eating lobster every night, right? And yet, but you guys want to continue obeying the law. I'm asking you, I'm begging you guys to go rogue. You know, the days of us fiddling around with organizations, hey, Tom, come out to Texas and shut down our organization. Are you fucking kidding me? The more you guys call in with that shit like that, yeah, I just lose more and more respect for the other aspects of the struggle. In fact, I want to say right now, you're not even part of the struggle. You're just part of some mental masturbation. You're afraid. And believe me, I know cowardice when I see it. You're afraid to take true revolutionary action. We've lost this country. We've lost England. You guys, you white Brits, you guys are smart. You guys can circumvent all that surveillance you got in your city. All you gotta do is just scout it out. You go for a walk through neighborhoods or through sections of town and just mentally memorize where all the cameras are. and know that they can't, the image they get at nighttime is not as good as they get during the day. So make a mental note while the cameras are. Don't stare at them. Don't stare at the cameras. When you're walking, walk with casual confidence. Every 100 feet, maybe stop and twist your upper section around like you're stretching out your lower back. Do windmills with your arm like you're, you know, out for an exercise type of walk. Or maybe a prelude to a run, I don't know. But scout out where these surveillance cameras are and do what you gotta do and dress in nondescriptive clothing that nobody knows that you have. Nobody, if you have a wife and children or whatever, or maybe a roommate, or you live with your mom and dad, Englanders, you know, they don't know that you own this specific clothing. And all the stuff that I say for insurgents in America applies to you Australians, New Zealand. I am a pan-Aryan thinking kind of guy. And it's time for us to fight for this race. Okay? You know, when I was in the Army, I was in the 7th Infantry Regiment in Aschaffenburg, and we had this thing called a cotton baler chant. Because the 7th Infantry Regiment fought in the Battle of New Orleans in 1812 or 1814. Another fratricidal war, whites killing whites. You know, the Americans won that war. I have absolutely no pride in that. You know, I don't want to see white Brits, white Germans, white anyone die. But we had that cotton baler chant. It went, born in the backwoods, raised by a bear, got a double bone jaw and 3 coats of hair, got cast iron balls and a blue steel rod. I'm a damn fine soldier, a cotton baler by God. I think maybe we should tweak those last 2 lines and make it talk about you ghost wolves. Born in the backwoods, raised by a bear, got a double bone jaw and 3 coats of hair, got cast iron balls and a blue steel rod. I'm a damn proud white man, a ghost wolf by God. You can't, you know, be about distributing literature no more. And if this makes me a marked man by the government, so be it. Like I told Tom Metro years ago, I am expendable. You know? When the final chapter of the white racist struggle is written, I don't anticipate having even a paragraph written about me. And that's fine with me. But to know, to go to my death knowing that, man, we're going to have a racist, resistance-led revolutionary movement, start kicking some ass, start manifesting this, you know, white racist rap that I wrote. Believe me, I do not listen to hip-hop. I despise hip-hop. It's the most unintelligent form of music there is. But that was directed to you Jews. You know, we could have had a utopia on this planet, Jews. We could have had a white utopia, and you could have been a part of it. If you would have just, you know, buried that axe, to, you know, bury the hatchet of all the gripes you have about the white race. Oh, you guys persecuted us. Listen, nothing happens in a vacuum. Okay? You guys weren't kicked out of all these nations in Europe because, you know, simply because you were victims. If I'm kicked out of 10 towns in Illinois, I'm going to come to the conclusion that maybe these 10 towns aren't the problem. Maybe I'm the problem. So nothing happens in a vacuum. Okay? I don't even know what I want to say next. I just get so frustrated because I just watch the news every day and I just see us losing. I walk out my door, I turn on my TV, and I see the death of the white race everywhere. And I want you guys so much to, you ghost wolves, you nameless, faceless people who live in the shadows, who don't leave paper trails, and don't leave electronic trails, and maybe, you know, you listen to these shows just for information you can glean, and that's fine. But I know there's people out there who have information that would be even more constructive than even possibly what I'm giving out. And we need that information. We need you guys to get involved on a very insurgent-like level. No more just wearing a T-shirt saying, oh, I'm defending my race. Listen, that stuff is being a clown. If you persist in tactics that are decades old, you are being a clown. And I hope you guys see that. I think, you know, I truly believe Tom Tom Metzger's ahead of his time to really promote the leaderless resistance cell structure thing. He's the only one doing it. I don't see it on WhiteRevolution.com or Stormfront and all these other so-called white racial websites. I don't see anything about leaderless resistance or cell structure or anything like that. I don't hear anyone reading up on this stuff and maybe adding to the movement's knowledge base on things like this. You know, but it's time for us. I mean, you know, you're creating a lot of zombies in our race. $9.8 billion at the box office. You know, and I venture to say that most of that money probably came from white moviegoers. You know, watching bullshit. You know, Marley and Me. You know, Dude, Where's My Car? I know it didn't come out in 08, but it's just an example. We're being stupefied, we're being marginalized and atomized, and we're not putting up any fight. Like that old cheap fucking bitch in Gran Torino said in her guttural, dumbass fucking Hmong language, said to Clint Eastwood's character, "Why are you still here? Why are you still in this neighborhood? All the Americans have moved out. It's not your neighborhood anymore." Hey, that is what is going through their minds. They are taking over large geographic areas, and they see that as their land. Even though we built the houses, we designed the streets, we paved the streets, it was the white man's genius to think of the grid structure or how streets should run and the infrastructure of water and sewer and lights and all this and gas. You know, that's the white man, and they claim that and say, "This is our land, this is our neighborhood." But they didn't build it. They're parasites. And we need to start getting a body count. And I don't care how that's fucking interpreted. We need to start getting a body count. And if you're by yourself, you're invincible. As long as you plan it out, be cool, don't write nothing down. And whatever things you buy to aid you in your ghost wolf activities, you don't keep it at your house. You make sure it doesn't have the barcode of the store you bought it on. You make sure that that's scraped off. Even if there's a serial number on a bolt cutter, I would find some way to grind it off. Grind it, any kind of identifying mark, anything you buy, grind it off. Oh, by the way, in your bug out bag, I suggest you put a small caliber pistol in there. I recommend a .380, like a Walther PPK or something like that, and just one box of ammo. Or maybe a Ziploc bag with 50 rounds in it, or whatever. But don't put fucking 300 rounds in this thing, okay? And turn it around. You may have to hump that bag for miles. And I hope you guys are walking with a backpack. I hope you guys are toughening up your feet and getting to know what it's like to walk. Because you may be a modern day hunter gatherer sooner than you think. You know, this thing about, you know, December 21st, 2012, I don't put much stock in the Mayan calendar and Nostradamus, but it is a proven fact that every 26,000 years when the sun rises in the middle of the Milky Way on the winter solstice, it does coincide with a lot of changes on the planet. You know, ice ages and great thaws and, you know, empires coming to an end or empires being born. Come on, man. Be part of the men against time. Be part of the destruction. You are morally right. You are against an enemy that's insurmountable. Practically, okay? So we need to get to work. We need to carpe noctem to the fullest. And we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. And you're going to starve the sheep inside you. There's a sheep in all of you. You're going to starve him. You're going to make sure that every bone on his body is sticking out because he's not being nourished at all. But the wolf, he's muscle-bound. He's muscular. He's well-fed, okay? Feed the wolf in you. If I can do this, anyone out there can do this. If I can kill the sheep in me and feed the wolf, there's no excuse for none of you, okay? I was the sissiest kid on the south side of Chicago. I was the sissiest kid, the most wussified kid in Romeoville, Illinois, growing up in the late 70s. You know, 3/4 of my life is just marked with cowardice, pussyfiedness, you know, pusillanimous shit, you know? And I'm not saying if I get into a fight now that I'm going to kick a lot of ass. All I can promise is if I'm going to fight, I will do my utmost to stick my knife in my adversary's eye to tickle the back, the inside of the back of his skull. That's the only thing I can guarantee. I can't guarantee I'll win or lose. I will just guarantee that I will do my utmost to cause as much damage as possible to my adversary, especially if he's a fucking shit skin. And I hope you feel the same way. All right? 14 and Carpe Noctem.